Good morning. I'm Jeff, and if you are joining us for the very first time today, we are in week five of the series, but I can bring you up to speed really quickly with the visual that you'll see on the screen. This is the Relationship Attachment Model, or RAM, developed by Dr. John Van Epp. And what it has been showing us, what we've been learning, is that all healthy relationships follow a natural progression. That it begins with getting to know someone, and then we're almost at the end of our series. As the relationship progresses, then you get to touch. And our relationship problems in all areas of life come when we get these out of order, when we rely on somebody before we know that we can trust them, or when we commit ourselves to somebody before we really know what they're like. And so this model is helping us learn that natural progression of not just how healthy relationships work, but how God designed healthy relationships to work. Now, we are going to finish the series next week, our grand finale, because all five of these things also apply to our relationship with God. You can look at all five of these things, all five of these aspects, and they all also apply to our personal relationship with God. So that's what we're going to talk about next week, and we're going to celebrate that with baptisms. And so if you've already decided in your head and made a commitment with your heart about who Jesus is and wanting to follow him, then and you haven't yet been baptized, we would love to help you be baptized. We can help you prepare during this week, but we'll also talk about it and explain it all next Sunday as we celebrate. And just for fun, just for the sake of building relationships, we're also going to have brunch together after both of the services next week. So it's going to be a lot of fun. That's next Sunday. That's the end. But today is the day that many of you have been looking forward to and waiting for the last 4 weeks. Today, we are going to talk about touch, which means that we will talk about sex, but not yet, because there is a life-giving power to human touch in all of our relationships. Let me give you some examples of this. There was a study done in America a few years ago about waiters and waitresses and touching the people that they're serving. Now, the actual statistical detail is on the screen there for you. But what this study found is that you're a food server. If you don't touch the customer that you're serving, the average tip that you'll receive is 11.9%. But if you touch them for up to 3 seconds, the tip goes up to over 14%. If you touch them for 4 seconds or longer, the tip starts to go down. And if you hang yourself all over them all night, you'll get a visit from the police. We also know that with parents, mums often get credit for the appropriate physical touch with their kids and how important that is, but for dads, this is also true. For dads, it might look a bit different than it does often for mums, but dads, you know, catching a child as they jump off of the couch or wrestling on the carpet, they're all important things to bond in relationship, and all of this kind of touch helps a child develop physically and socially and mentally and emotionally. There's this life-giving power to human touch. Think about professional sports. Watch team sports next time and pay attention to how often the players touch each other. You know, ruffle each other's hair, pat each other on the back, even on the backside, lots of high fives and fist bumps and all sorts of things. It might seem weird if you're not in the team, but they're encouraging each other. That's how this works. Now, we know that not all touch is appropriate. Some of it is weird, some of it is creepy, and some of it is criminal. The kind of touch that we're talking about and encouraging today is appropriate. It's invited, it's welcome, and when it is like that, it's powerful and life-giving. Now, if you're still unconvinced, let's talk about newborn babies and their mothers. Or, not quite in the same way, but to some extent, even newborn babies and their fathers. You know, evidence shows that skin-to-skin contact between mum and bubs is vital in the first moments after birth and can have dramatic effects on both the baby and the mother. Skin-to-skin contact will calm and relax both baby and mother. And it even regulates the baby's heart rate and breathing. Now, in preemie babies, it's even more important. It can reduce cortisol, stress levels, particularly after they've had a painful procedure, and it can even reduce the length of a hospital stay if you can have skin-to-skin contact between mother and baby. There is life-giving power that happens with human touch. This is just the way God wired us. In our everyday life, we need appropriate non-sexual human touch. We need handshakes. We need fist bumps. We need high fives. We need this kind of touch and contact in our life. And at this point, because, you know, we're a church and this is a message, a sermon, I should show you a Bible verse about a time that Jesus touched somebody. But instead, what I did is I looked up all of the occasions where Jesus touched someone and I put a bunch of the references on the screen. Jesus was always reaching out. Jesus was always appropriately touching people, and particularly people that no one else would touch. People that were considered dirty or were considered outsiders, he'd even reach out and touch them. And check this out, 5 times in the New Testament, followers of Jesus are instructed to greet one another with a holy kiss. And so because we believe in practicing the Bible here at the Lakes Church, I'd like you to just turn and lean over to the person next to you and, no, not now, don't do that now. But in case you're wondering, you know, greet one another with a holy kiss. It comes from an original Greek word in the original text. It just means a COVID elbow bump. That's what it means. No, it doesn't mean that either. But it probably doesn't mean a kiss in the way that you're thinking of. Now, we all know that COVID has caused a huge adjustment to the way that we interact physically. And that's for good reason, and it's for a certain season of life and of time in our world. But it will be good and better when this season is over, because of the life-giving power that happens with touch. You know, there's some people here in the room, some people who are part of our church, the only time they're touched is when they come to church. There should be warm affection in God's family. When you arrived today, when you walked up, hopefully you received a verbal welcome. You might have got a handshake. If you knew the person, if they were a friend, you might have even got a hug. This is the way that it should be in God's family and as part of our church, because touch is so important and powerful. It's one of the reasons why we'll often put a hand on someone's shoulder when we're praying for them. Now, if you're not a hugger and you're thinking, this is all too much, you know, I'm quite happy with social and physical distancing. I do not want any of this. Let me just teach you the universal symbol to let someone know you do not want a hug. If someone is coming in for you with a hug, you just need to put your hand out for a high five in their face. And they'll quickly get the message that you would not like to receive a hug on this occasion. That's totally fine. But let me say it again, and Jesus knew it. There is a life-giving power that happens with human touch. And before we turn our attention to sexual touch, let me encourage you and even challenge you to express this more in your life. It should be appropriate. It should be welcome. And particularly with children and vulnerable people, it needs to be invited, and also it should never be in secret. But there's a life-giving power to human touch, and we should express that and practice that. So, here's the second truth I want you to take home today. There's a life-giving power with human touch, and there's a bond-building power with sexual touch. Now, in the Bible, we find quite a few things about this bond-building power of sexual touch. And the first is that God says it is good. It's good because he created it. You know, we find in Genesis chapter 1, the very beginning of the Bible, it says that God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And then God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply. Multiply. One translation says, have many children and grow in number. So if you want to get detailed about it, the very first command God gave in the Bible was to have sex. It's the very first thing God ever told people to do. He put within us the desire for sexuality and the ability for it. It is good. Our sexuality is not evil. God created it and it's good. Now, one of the challenges that I have as I talk about sex and sexuality today is what kind of language should I use? Like, we have Lakes Kids on for our primary school children. We have teenagers all the way through up to adults in the room. So should I use like anatomically correct words for body parts or for acts? Should I use slang? But, you know, what kind of slang? Should I use the kind of slang that your mates from school would use? Or the kind of slang that some parents use to give, you know, cute names to things? But what we're going to find in the Bible is that when authors of the Bible talk about sex, most often they talk about it poetically. We find all sorts of expressions of sexuality, and most often in the Bible, it is poetic. For example, in the Old Testament book of Song of Solomon, we find conversations between a man and with a woman, and then other characters come in and say different things and use very poetic language that will make you blush. For example, in chapter 7, in verses 8 and 9, a man says to a woman, "I will climb the palm tree and take hold of its fruit. May your breasts be like grape clusters and the fragrance of your breath like apples. May your kisses be as exciting as the best wine." Whew. Like that's pretty steamy stuff. And then from a woman's point of view, just a couple of verses later in verse 10, "I am my lover's and he claims me as his own. Come, my love, let us go out to the fields and spend the night among the wildflowers. Let's get up early and go to the vineyards to see if the grapevines have budded, if the blossoms have opened, and if the pomegranates have bloomed. There I will give you my love." These are metaphors. She isn't talking about actual pomegranates or actual grapevines. This is very descriptive, steamy, erotic, sexual language over and over and over. In the Bible, we find a celebration of the bond-building power of sexual touch. It is good. But importantly, it also has boundaries. Even good things have boundaries. Let me give you a totally different example. I love hearing rain sprinkling on our roof and out the window sprinkling on the grass. It just sounds beautiful. I love the sound of rain falling. But what I don't like is when the rain falls on my roof and then finds its way through my roof and then soaks my ceiling and finds its way into my house. Rain falling is good, but rain falling through my roof into my house is not. Even good things have boundaries. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 13 from the New Testament. It says, "Give honor to marriage and remain faithful to one another in marriage. God will surely judge people who are immoral and those who commit adultery." Now, the same verse in the Message translation, "Honor marriage and guard the sacredness of sexual intimacy between wife and husband. God draws a firm line against casual and illicit sex." Honor, guard, sacredness. In the New International Version, it says, "Keep the marriage bed pure," because although sex is good, it has boundaries. It needs to be guarded and kept sacred. Now, if you look in the stories of the Bible, in the history of the Bible, you find a lot of sex. And it's not all good. It's not there as an example to us all the time. Sometimes it's just recording what happened. But if you follow the stories, what you find is when sex is expressed outside of appropriate boundaries, it leads to heartbreak. It leads to pain. It leads to confusion. It leads to families blowing up, and it leads to wars between nations. The message over and over and over again is that sexual expression is to happen in a God-honoring covenant relationship of marriage, where a man and a woman have committed themselves to one another for a lifetime. Why? Because sex has a bond-building power. And outside of God's design, hearts get broken and people get hurt and families get blown apart and addictions develop. And you might say, or you might hear, well, we're just hooking up. We're just friends with benefits. There's no spiritual connection. And if you've ever said that or ever tried to convince yourself of that, you've greatly underestimated the bond-building power of sexual touch. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6 from the Apostle Paul. In the Message translation, he wrote, "There's more to sex than mere skin on skin. Sex is as much spiritual mystery as physical fact. As written in Scripture, the two become one. Since we want to become spiritually one with the Master, that's Jesus, we must not pursue the kind of sex that avoids commitment and intimacy, leaving us more lonely than ever. The kind of sex that can never become one." When you have sex with another person, you aren't just touching their body. You're touching them. You can't give someone your body and not your soul, because sex binds two people together. And when you pull that apart, you leave part of yourself behind. Let me, again, try and illustrate for you with something completely different. Let's say that you wanted to go skiing at the snow. Well, you know that's never going to happen in Cairns, so you've got to go north. Port Douglas. No, further than that. out of the tropics, probably to Japan. That's where people from Cairns go snow skiing. Go to Japan and ski. Or you could go south, past Townsville, because it's not going to snow there either. Maybe down to Thredbo. That's where the good snow is. And imagine you're at Thredbo. And for some reason, there's hardly anyone else around, but the snow is perfect. Overnight, snow falls, and it's thick and powdery, and your favorite slopes are virtually just outside your door. So you wake up and you have breakfast and you get yourself ready and you go on out and you've got your gear and you jump on the ski lift, on the chairlift, and you start going up your favorite slope ready to ski. And as you're sitting there in the slope looking out at the beautiful morning, it's sunny but it's freezing cold and beautiful snow everywhere, you glance over to your left and you see a pole there right next to your head that's holding the chair onto the lift. It's an icy pole because, you know, it's freezing cold. And you look at it and you think to yourself, surely not. Surely the stereotype, the caricature, the thing that you see in the movies, the urban legend, surely that wouldn't actually happen. Like if I put my tongue on that frozen pole, surely my tongue wouldn't actually stick to it, would it? Nah, that's got to be rubbish. There's got to be something from the movies. And so you lean over, stick out your tongue, and stick it onto the pole. And what happens next? You leave part of yourself behind. There are few things more sacred and sensitive than a person's sexuality. And if you're not married, this is the time, your single days are the time to firmly establish that physical intimacy is going to be engaged in a way that honors God and contributes to the overall health of all of your relationships. And we all instinctively know that this is an important area that we have to be careful about, an area to be prized and treasured and protected because people get hurt. And because souls get wounded. And when the boundaries are crossed, God's not trying to keep us from having fun. He's trying to keep us from bonding with other people who won't be there for us in the future. So this is why, long before you ever get to sex, it starts right back here with getting to know someone. And you discover whether or not there's someone that you can put your trust in. And then you begin to rely on them and eventually make that together till death do us part commitment in marriage. And then, and only then in God's plan, are you ready to move to the bond-building power, the spiritual mystery of sexual touch. And when you get to this point, sex is not only good, but it's an important and an essential part of the marriage relationship. But here's the reality. While God says sex is good and sex has boundaries, most likely if you're married, the sexual dimension of your marriage could be better. Because life happens, right? Kids come along and you get worn out and tired and end up in different places on different pages, and some of you, because of that or because of work or your health issues, there's just so much fatigue that it complicates intimacy. And for some of you, your body is changing, and that's changing and complicating intimacy. And another obstacle to intimacy is ongoing conflict. When differences and disagreements happen and they're not talked through and they're not dealt with and they go unresolved, just the natural, normal clashes in marriage go unresolved, and then there's detachment and distance and disconnection, and spouses pull away from each other and don't talk about their issues or their differences, and there's criticism instead of encouragement and affirmation. And sometimes this goes on for years and years. And some of you read so many books and watch so many movies, even pornography, about love and romance and sexuality, and you bring all of those unrealistic expectations into the bedroom. Before marriage, you assume this is all just going to be bliss, 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 and ecstasy, ecstasy, ecstasy. But that's not always the reality. You're not aiming for New Year's Eve fireworks every single time you connect sexually. It's something that you grow in together as a couple, and you learn together, and you have to be both grateful and realistic in different seasons of life. But it can be better. It can be better. There are things that all married people need to keep learning about and building and working on to improve the sexual dimension of marriage. I'm going to share three of them with you. The first one is to build an atmosphere of affection. Now, what I'm about to say next might sound like an oxymoron to some of you, but that includes non-sexual touch. What? What? Non-sexual touch in marriage. Like, what even is that? Some of you have never even thought about that or even think that that's a thing. Let me give you an example from the Bible. In Genesis chapter 26, it says that Isaac was caressing his wife, Rebekah. He's expressing affection to her. There's holding going on, but not intercourse. Holding, caressing, touching. So guys, because stereotypically it's guys, when a woman says, I just want to be held, what she really means is, I just want to be held. It's not a cue for you to make your move. Now, I want to invite all of you to do some maths with me for a moment. Okay, you can just do it in your head. They're very simple. I'm pretty sure everyone will be able to do this. 5 plus 5, and 7 plus 3, and 1 plus 9. All equal 10. And one relationship expert found after years of research and years of speaking with couples that it takes 10 non-sexual touches to help keep a couple close and emotionally healthy in the relationship. 10. Now, it could be a hug. It could be holding hands. It could just be cheek brushing cheek. It could be bumping into each other accidentally in the hallway. 10 non-sexual touches every single day to keep a couple emotionally healthy in the relationship and connected. So if you're married, let me ask you, what's your number? How are you doing? It takes 10 every day to develop and increase intimacy in the bond-building power of sexual touch. So build an atmosphere of affection. The second thing is to increase your commitment to communication. Dr. John Van Epp, the genius who came up with the RAM, he says that the number one problem that couples experience when it comes to sexual conflict, the number one problem is not money, it's not family issues, not in-law issues, the number one problem is frequency when it comes to sexual difficulties. Frequency. Now, the stereotype tells us that guys are like a microwave. Shut the door, push the button, and they're ready to go. And women are more like ovens or slow cookers. It takes a while to warm up and be ready. That's the stereotype. But what Dr. John Van Epp has found, and what almost every single conversation I've had with couples counseling tells me, is that the stereotype is never true. But the problem is always true. It's always frequency that causes sexual tension. And it can come from either direction in any way you like. And the way to work through it is communication, to increase your commitment to communication. So if you find in your marriage you have different perspectives on frequency, talk about it. Increase your commitment to communication. So if you want life in the bedroom to be better, develop an atmosphere of affection, increase communication, and maintain an attitude of giving. Now, Gene Apple is the pastor of Eastside Church in Los Angeles. He's the one who came up with the Crazy Stupid Love series that we're borrowing from. And he tells this great story about when his wife Barbara turned 40 and he wanted to surprise her with the best gift ever for her 40th birthday. And so he did some covert research. A month before, at family dinner with their kids there, he just asked the kids one by one, you know, what would be your perfect day? Describe your perfect day to me. So the kids have their go. And then he goes to Barbara. He goes, well, how about you? Tell me, what would your perfect day be? And he's like taking mental notes. And all of you are like, this is a good idea. I'm doing this today. He takes his mental notes. And then he gets himself organized. And a week before her 40th birthday, he rings her up on a Friday morning and he says, hey, stop what you're doing and come have lunch with me. We're going to have lunch today on Friday. So they meet for lunch. And while they're eating lunch, he pulls out like this little brown paper bag with handles. You know, like the little brown bag. And he hands it to her. She's like, what's this? Yes, I've just got something for you. And so she starts opening the bag and pulling things out. And there's like this little, manicure set in there that he bought from Kmart for like a dollar. And there's like this little bottle of cheap bubble bath in there. And then there's a paperback novel. And she's like, you're an idiot. What is this? What is going on? And some of you are sitting there thinking, oh, this is a really good idea. Do your secret research, buy cheap gifts and win. He said, well, this is your perfect day. You said you wanted to be alone by yourself. And so I got you a paperback novel, you know, representing wanting to read. And you said, you know, you wanted to like do some spa treatments and be pampered. Well, you know, bubble bath and the manicure kit. This is perfect. And she's like rolling her eyes. He goes, well, keep looking. So she pulls out this envelope. And it's quite a big envelope, a big card. And it says Barbara's perfect day on the front. So she opens it up and on the front of the card, you know, it says Barbara's perfect day begins here. And she turns it over, and there's a picture of a hotel there where he's booked her a reservation for 3 nights. And then she says, and then it says, and it includes this. And she turns the page, and it's got a list of spa treatments that he's already booked for her while she's away for these 3 days. And then it says, and it includes a visit from, and she turns the page, and it's a photo of her son, Jeremy, who's away at university. In another city, he's going to come and visit her and have dinner with her on her special birthday day, 3 days. And at this point, you know, she's starting to cry, and he's like, yes, finally, finally, after years of being non-communicative, after years of not building a positive atmosphere of affection, finally, I got it right. And a week later, Barbara spent her perfect day, or her perfect 3 days. And it was only afterwards, while she was having her time away, that Gene thought to himself and realized her perfect day didn't include him. But he still got it right, and they're still happily married years later. Now, this is the truth about a mutually successful, fulfilling sex life, is that it doesn't begin in the bedroom. It begins in here, in your heart. And this is what the Apostle Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 7 in verse 3. He wrote that the marriage bed must be a place of mutuality. The husband seeking to satisfy his wife, the wife seeking to satisfy her husband. Marriage is not a place to stand up for your rights. Marriage is a decision to serve the other, whether in bed or out. If you're listening to that and reading that this morning and you're nudging your spouse saying, see, did you write that reference down? Then you've missed the point. Because marriage is a decision to serve the other, whether in bed or out. So building an atmosphere of affection, increasing your commitment to communication and maintaining a selfless attitude of giving will go a long way in growing and developing the bond-building power of sexual touch in marriage. And you won't get this right all the time, but you can work on it and it can be better together. Now, one more thing before I finish today, and this is really important. Statistics would say that in a church of our size and the people that are watching online, that I'm talking to some people today that have made some mistakes in this area of our life. I'm talking to some single people today who've made some mistakes in this area of their lives. Welcome to the club. Most of us have. And statistics would also say that I'm speaking to some married people today that have made some mistakes, maybe outside of their marriage, or with pornography. And I want you to hear this, that we don't have a God who stayed above us, 10,000 meters, just looking down, angrily waiting to judge us. We have a God who came and became flesh and walked among us. Why? To come and save people who would need his amazing grace. And if you're sitting here this morning and you're looking around and you're thinking, these people have got it all together, you'd be dead wrong. We're not here because we have it all together. We're here because we know how much we need that amazing grace. And some of you, you know today that you're not whole, and there are parts of your soul that you have just given away or have been taken from you. And I want you to know that the God of the universe knows where every part of your soul has gone. And he is committed to going and finding it and bringing it back and knitting you together into wholeness. Because he's always been a God of forgiveness and reconciliation and wholeness. And so if you know today that just like me, you need that forgiveness, and you need that search and rescue, and you need that wholeness, would you join me in prayer? God, we thank you for the way you've made us, where human touch is incredibly life-giving. And we thank you for the way you've made us, where sexual touch is incredibly bond-building. And we thank you that where we've made mistakes, that you understand and feel our pain. That even the times that we were oblivious, you could see what was really going on. And the pain or the trauma or the confusion or the uncertainty or the regret that we'd later feel. You get all that. And yet you still came as Jesus, flesh and blood, to walk among us with your amazing grace. So that not only could we be accepted by you, but we could be completely forgiven, and that you would work to knit us back together and make us whole. So we ask, Lord, that you would come and do that work in us. We thank you for the forgiveness that comes in Jesus' name, and we want to participate in the reconciliation and the wholeness that comes in Jesus' name. And today we want to commit ourselves to actively, healthily bringing life through human touch and celebrating the goodness and honoring the boundaries of the bond-building power of sexual touch. In Jesus' name, amen.